Okay, that's nice coffee, Thomas.
So what was a bit of milk?
Yes, thank you.
So this is a right ambience for the interview, because I anyway we don't do interviews, we do discussions, if at all.
Okay. So what were the questions you had about the podcast, Thomas?
I'm at Thomas's home today, and we are having breakfast. I'm with Thomas and Budu, and Thomas has a few questions about podcasts.
Yeah, what is a podcast? Is it a new technology? Is it a new medium, or what is it actually? I think podcast is nothing more like a little sound file with a specific file format, nothing more.
Yeah, okay. I think it's quite difficult to define, I think. In a way, it's... Yes, of course, it's a sound file, right? But it's a different kind, I think, because it's normally a... Ideally,
yeah, but for the user, you see, it doesn't really matter if it is a cassette or a CD-ROM or a sound file. A sound file, isn't it? So what is the specific? You're harping about
harping about
ePods and Profcasting and all this type of thing, and in. Essentially, it is actually a sound file, which only is different in terms of interoperability and transportability from one technical gadget to the other. You can play it on a MP3 player, and you can play it on your computer. That's essentially the difference. But why this specific attention? Podcasting gets, besides the fact that you got research money for doing all these questions.
Well, I think the research money, we got the research money because there is something special about it, right? Okay. And the special about it is, podcast is quite a popular word at the moment, so there is a lot of attention given to this particular phenomena of podcasting, right? And and also there's a lot of misunderstanding as well, so we need to, I think, unpack what is it?
Podcasting is it actually used very much in an educational context, or it is just used privately by lots of people, sort of like loading down music files, and you could also have talked in the past from Napster casting or something like that, when people used Napster for downloading music files. And if some a clever professor would have applied for research money to look for research this phenomenon, and they would probably also have got some money. Why do you think specifically in the distance education or educational area, podcasting is a specific phenomenon? Who is using it, and in which case it is sort of a medium? Yeah, and here comes my other question. Is it my initial question? Is it a medium? Well, it is a sound file, and that is a medium aspect. Is it a technology? Well, it is a technology insofar there is a file format specified. There's some sort of technical gadgets on which you can operate it. Otherwise, you include in the definition of podcasting a lot of... aspects relating to the technical configuration of the social use of podcasting, and I think that is an aspect which interests me more. Mm. There are lots of social uses, sort of configurations in which it is used, and some of it may be relevant for education. So that is actually a question you need to tell me about more. What, how it is actually, or could it be used in educational context? Okay, question back to you.
Yes, okay. I think you were, by trying to unpack, I think you almost unpacked what is a podcast. So there is the technical aspect of it, and if you look at it simply, it's a sound file, therefore it's not really anything more than a sound recording on a cassette or any other device. But I think when it is delivered as an MP3 file or sound file, a digital sound file in a digital playback device, and then combined with its ability to be portable and easy to use, then comes its growing interest or the use. And you're talking about the social phenomena, the social use, and educational use. I think there are quite a lot of potential educational uses. As you know, the universities like Stanford iTunes initiative and various U.S. universities.
Stanford iTunes?
Yeah, I think it is Stanford and several other universities as well were trying to use.
What they are doing?
Well, what they did was they provided a lot of the content and made those available in preloaded into the. We are going to be pictured. Okay, so photographed. Right. Okay. Yeah, so I think, and what they did was they provided a lot of their content into, put them into iPods and gave these to students. And these students, this content was about the university and various aspects of their course. So and that became, I mean, that is one of the reasons why it became quite popular. So it's, yes, there is a marketing aspect as well. But if you take all that hype away and really think what this these podcasts or these small short
but
sound
interesting
files.
Enough yes yeah, small sound yeah. The emphasis is on small that yeah. Means if I could imagine okay traditional professors gave substantial lectures about 45 minutes and more, and this seems to be for the new learners not any more digestible, so so new hype became very small snippets of sound files where you can preferably in a very informal and social manner say little more than hello, how are you, is the weather nice, and you embed all these snippets in your learning sort of in your course material, like raisins in a cake, and I like raisins also, but I like raisins to eat with a cake, and therefore it makes no sense to speak about raisins separately from the cake. So we have to evaluate actually the whole educational learning environment, for instance. I think I have no problems to say that, within the context of a Stanford learning material, which might be dry and too pompous, maybe, I don't know, depends on the lecturers, that sort of a sprinkling of informality and might be quite useful, but does it substantially contribute to the flavor of the educational cake in such a way that it merits a specific research interest?
Yes, it does. because if you don't...
You have to say that.
Well, it is, yes, we have to say that. And also, it fits within a lot of other research interests as well. It's about mobile learning, which is big, big area. And unless we do research, I think what might happen is... you know, previously there was a potential of radio, audio was always existent. At the Open University, they were using radio and video cassettes and so on. And but that didn't really take off in other universities. Still, what we in universities, what do? We lecture, and an hour long lecture, maybe 2 hour long lecture. Mm-hmm. And what is the what are the research outcomes? What are the research based evidence that's the best way to do? And if you speak to students, they don't really like it. I mean, within this project, we go and talk to students, and they say they don't stay after the first hour in the lecture because it's sometimes there are only a minority of very motivating and charismatic lecturers, but not a lot of them are not like you, Thomas.
No, right?
I'm not lecturing. Okay. So, therefore, I think we need to find other ways of providing content and providing resources.
Podcasting is there are deteriorating learner habits because learners cannot anymore concentrate.
Well,
and
that's
we are
the other
playing to the audience in such a way.
Well, you have to play to the audience sometimes. Otherwise, you might lose the audience. And might be a someone who can play to the audience, and they might grab the audience.
Yes,
and they won't come to your shop. If they don't like your goods and your services.
Well, it depends on to which extent education becomes,
becomes
a market.
Yes, that's right. So that's why through research we can identify what are the good pedagogical models. In this particular research,
okay,
let's
go back to the thing. I've heard that, in the literature you find the distinction, for instance, between learning presence and social presence. And I think where podcasts as small sound file snippets in a way can serve is to show social presence in a way that to show the learner that that the teacher is also a human being which is not able to speak in whole sentences in the same way as he could write them, and he's doing what I'm doing now, mumbling and not sure actually how succinctly deliver his message and so on. So that you can show, but it is more the social atmosphere and is more this motivating aspect, but again all this must be built on a firm basis of a media configuration which actually can carry the substance and the main teaching and learning interaction. So again, it is the raisins, it's not the cake. Okay, essentially you have already accepted this point.
Yes. You need to have the cake. But I think I don't know how to make cake, but I guess if you think about putting raisins, you kind of probably think about the cake, the whole cake as well. You might make your cake slightly differently if you are putting raisins.
Yes, it is.
Somebody who... Do you know how to make cakes, Gudu?
I know how to make cakes.
You know, okay, right.
But generally you would not start with raisins to think of to determine which type of cake you want to make. First, you have a sort of whole picture of what is a cake to be like, and then you decide if the cake merits raisins.
Hmm.
And you seem to me to do the opposite. You seem to say, I want to use raisins, what's the proper cake for my raisins?
No.
The answer is very easy, raisin cake.
Right, okay. Well, I think not really. Where I'm coming from is there is this growing interest in raisins. So, okay, in this case, podcast, let's say you take
you want to increase the market share for raisins.
Oh, not necessarily. I'm worried. I'm worried, just worried, whether because of this interest in raisins, whether the academic community or the cooking community, in this case, will abuse raisins to the point that the value of raisins will not be appreciated anymore. So, therefore, we need to take an initiative to inform the cooking community that you ought to, if you are thinking about using raisins, these are the possible suggested ways.
Okay,
so that the raisin consumer will.
Okay, let me ask two questions.
Right.
The first question is. I've heard, for instance, small sound snippets being used, for instance, in mobile learning. In, for instance, the South Africans, they want to use mobile phones and distribute to their student teachers, and which I find a very sensible thing in South Africa now. The coverage from mobile telephony is all over the country. You can, that means Nokia phones will operate. So teachers, student teachers will have these phones and can be informed, for instance, by UNISA staff that the assignment is sent to the nearest town or to the nearest growth point, because generally student teachers are out in the sticks, they have to get a bus and to reach the next post office, and it is very demotivating if you do a long journey and partly also a costly journey to find only that your assignment is not there. So for these organizational purposes, and also for purposes, as I said, of social presence, showing social presence, I think these sound files delivered on telephone are helpful. But South Africans want to go one step further and also deliver by telephone sort of mini lectures. Sort of you students get a number and they can dial it and get a you would probably say a small podcasting which should capture the gist of the study guide. And this I find well this I probably it is it is worth considering it, but this I find a bit dubious. It might be helpful if the student really reads the study guides and get another sort of more personalized summary, but in a way the danger is you take the raisins you pick the raisins only, don't eat the cake anymore. That is not substantial enough for
But if the cake is tasty enough, I don't think they will leave the cake part out. I mean, that's a worry. That's a worry that a lot of the some of the academic community might have, is that they are a little bit worried about their cake, because if it is a badly made cake, I mean,
okay, you start to exploit the metaphor for your purposes. Okay,
you wish you use a different metaphor. Okay, you can change the metaphor. Yeah, I think of okay.
The question was actually, could you could you indeed use podcasting for these purposes? For instance, would you think that the South Africans now say our mini lectures we play on the telephone are podcasts?
Mini lectures.
Well, these are
on the telephone. How do they play it on the telephone?
Yeah, well, that are sound files, and they record this, and sort of, if you dial a certain number, you listen to a
recorded message.
Yeah,
okay.
A recorded message.
Yeah, well,
since we said essentially that podcasts are nothing but sound files, I would say this is an application of sound files, of the podcasting.
I
think you should be happy about that. You should say, okay, that's wonderful. Here we see that podcasting is actually, there's a substantial application of podcasting in South Africa. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, I think that is true. That is true, because our main focus is what you use these short sound files are for, what is the educational value, and then we are not really bothered about how it has been delivered.
Yeah,
it could be delivered on the internet or through a telephone
line. Say the advantage of podcasts is that it can be used in different context, in different scenarios and so on. So you should actually, I in your case, would select sort of scenarios where podcasts play a substantial role. And one of the scenarios would be this type of mobile learning applications in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's probably already what my second question was about, podcasting in developing countries. Could you say that, because in my class, actually, I had one American student who is now working in Fiji, and he is also introducing his colleagues in podcasting, because he says this is a sort of low-cost radio application which can be produced by staff themselves and easy to distribute and so on. So he argues that podcasts are low-cost options also for developing countries. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Did you ever made a sort of calculation about costs of podcasting?
Cost of podcasting. Okay. Why are you?
No. Well, you said when I asked, is this a low cost option? Then said yes.
What I meant by low cost is low resource intensive. In terms of teachers' time, I mean, it's not totally free. It will cost time. For example, the lecturer, the pilot study we did, Professor Fothergill, he spends about an hour of his time to produce create a podcast of 10 minutes long. And so that's an hour of his time. He could have probably done something else. But, you know, you ought to look at what the benefits are as well. Some of the benefits might not be easily measurable. So there is a cost involved. So I would say 10 minutes, an hour of a lecturer's time, if the lecturer is the only person who is trying to make it. But there are other models as well within this project. There is one lecturer who gets her students to create sound files. So that will involve several people, and then the editing time and so on. But we need
why,
to look
why
at
do you why do you edit them? You
well, if you ask several students to create sound files using these sort of machines, you need to put them together in some way, and into a, because you need to think about the listener. The listener doesn't.
Well, you think a listener then listens to lots of these snippets one after the other? Or?
Well, there should be a consistency. Suppose you are a lecturer. Suppose I am a teacher.
So you now, I have now accepted as a relevance of raisins in a cake, and now I'm confronted with
different kind of raisins.
A string of raisins, and which tends more and more to substitute the cake and a string of raisins. So I doubt if this is a good idea.
What makes you think the cake is the better thing than the raisin? I mean, at some point, maybe people might think that, hey, wait a minute, the raisins is not too bad. Why do we not...
First, I don't. Up to now, I thought the podcast is essentially a thing a teacher does. A teacher does, and since it is so costly to have professional radio producers, and we want to operate low cost, we accept a sort of rambling teacher and excusing our low-cost approach because we say, okay, this is nice and personal and cozy, and students lose their respect and fear of the authority of the teacher. This is a good thing. On the other hand, we are also very content because the teacher is doing all it himself, so it is rather low cost.
Mm.
So low quality, low cost, we play to the audience of students who anyway can only digest snippets. That was my experience up to now. Now you say you want to do much more. You are not any more content with having raisins put in the cake, but you want collect raisins, not only from the teacher, but also from the students, and to string them together into an alternative new thing. I call for the discussion here, I call string cake.
String cake. Okay.
Yeah. So, what is the nutritional advantage of the string cake?
Right. Now.
How to explain that string cake at all? What?
Yeah. What is it? Okay.
You collect podcasts from students. Also.
Well.
And do you think Professor Fothergill, whom you have exploited for 1 hour already to make a 10 minutes podcast. Professor Fothergill has the time to listen to all this rumbling of his students about what the students will respond.
You need to understand what the string cake consists of.
Mm.
Right. In Professor Fothergill's case, he his model is different. It's he who makes the podcasts. So in this case, there weren't students involved. But the other case I was going to talk, I just mentioned, was you were saying that the lecturer should. I think we kind of agreed that the lecturer should. It's the kind of person who will decide mainly an education value of adding raisins.
Yes.
Okay. So, in all these cases, we are the research is working on. It's the lecturers deciding, finding a niche for the use of podcasts.
Yeah.
That other things cannot achieve. Right. So it's the person who makes a cake decides what the added value of raisins are. Okay. And in this case, this particular lecturer was of the idea that students have certain difficulties of doing their assessed work, and they need a little bit more support.
Yeah, you need some more.
Yes.
Okay. So
you can interrupt our discussion because this is informality and
in the spirit of podcast. Yeah. Yes, raisins.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So she thought one of the best ways of. Her approach is fits within larger framework of institutional use of all the different kinds of learning and teaching methods and resources. Mm-hmm. Right. What she thought was
students can provide advice to other students on getting along with their assessed work. It's not only the teacher who can provide guidance, right? So some of the ways in which he thought students can help was the getting the senior students to talk about their own experience of doing this assessed work. So things like what will happen if you start late, what will happen, how you might achieve assessed work if you start fairly early, and things like what are the added value of providing the assessed work early draft to your lecturer, and so on. So she got students to record their own reflections and then put them together in as a small radio program. 10 minutes well, long, 5 to 10 minutes long. So, I mean...
I'm afraid that sounds not very convincing in my...
Why do you think it's not convincing?
Basically, I think students have sometimes to... people in life have to make the experience what it means to state... start late themselves.
Late and early, that's just an example.
Your examples were actually showing that rather formal. Okay, I could imagine that there is... in your example, I think it is rather, in a way, rather... not very convincing for me, because all this advice you mentioned students get from their peers is very commonsensical. They could have, in a minute of thinking, they could have thought about it themselves, and if not, then listening to it also will not do change very much, because they have to experience what it will be and how the institution will react and so on. So I found this not too convincing, but I could imagine that you could, for instance, say we want to have a sort of peer-to-peer evaluation of each other's work, this type of thing. Mm. But the question is, if stringing up these little podcasts in an edited long podcast is the best format to do this. For me, it is obviously that then an integrated environment like Breeze is much more useful, where you can actually in real time talk to each other.
That assumes that you can get all the students in real time.
Why not going back to the asynchronous text-based advice then, if it is asynchronous? What I think it is a bit you are sort of contradicting your own initial argument. Your initial argument about the beauty of a raisin was the raisin is small, round, and self-contained. That is why it is so attractive to students. Mm-hmm. It is a small thing. It is, yeah. And now you edit it in a sort of difficult, digestible, long string of raisins. Nobody wants to eat for breakfast anymore. So this seems to contradict your own initial praise.
But I think that's. Thomas, that is to do with our limitation of the metaphor, perhaps. Maybe we need a different kind of thing, which is not so limiting as a raisin.
Does not hinge on the metaphor, because you said the motivational part of it is informal. The professor, at the beginning we spoke only about the professor is doing a small short introductions, and students are bored by the long difficult to digest lectures, and they find these small informal introductions very nice, and it adds to the flavor of the whole teaching interaction if you spread these type of sound files in between. It shows social presence, it shows a sort of informality and warmth and things like that. These all depends on the fact that these things are sort of small sound files.
Mm-mm.
Now, if you put them together, you lose this initial advantage.
But and still,
it changes substantially in character.
What I meant by small is something like between 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, but
I mean,
you have now podcasts of 10 students, for instance. And
No. It won't be 10 talking about each 5 minutes, so it's going to be 50 minutes. No,
yeah.
It could be one or two students, and each talking about 2 or 3 minutes, and each talking about maybe 1 minute. So it depends on what these students are talking about.
Small
sound file, that criteria applies. It won't deviate from that.
Yeah, but then my attack on this would be that on top of the initial work of the teacher, you have still to do some editing work.
And
since, as also Professor Fothergill said in his lecture, you can't very much reuse the podcast.
I don't think he was generalizing.
Especially not when you use different students in a class for commenting on something. You cannot use these for a completely different class.
No, you won't.
You won't. Therefore, you add, you have first of all the lecturer who does his podcast.
Mm.
Then it is probably a substantial process for getting students to do a recording also. Then you must edit the recording and put it together. Even specifically, the more editing work it is, the more different people with smaller and smaller snippets you want to integrate to your eventual podcast. Therefore, you increase editing work, and therefore in a way, you increase the cost, so you don't pay your students. Probably, you just they think it is fun and they do it for fun. But still, there is the editing work you have to do, and you have no scale economies whatsoever for it. And the only thing you have is the rather difficult measure of raising a bit the temperature of motivation in your class. The other educational outcome is still very doubtful, and as you said yourself, it's probably very difficult to measure.
Yeah, it is difficult to measure, and also I don't think in these kind of cases they are thinking about getting whole institutions to do the same thing. It's almost, I think what we think is it's almost like almost like cottage industry. I think it won't be. We are not really talking about if a lecturer thinks that this is the best way of using podcasts for his or her module. I don't think he or she will think that is the best way of doing it for others as well. It's others to decide. So each individual. That's why in the 10-12 cases that we have, none of them are similar to each other. They found within their specific subject module. So they think about the subject or the specific discipline. They think about the students. They think about the numbers. And they also think about what were the previous challenges they had.
I could imagine, for instance, if I take my context, this would be rather work intensive. If I, for instance, say I want to do a podcast with different students,
well,
and then I inform them and say, okay, I want you to describe your experience with this assignment, and then the students assume, I assume now students will not have any difficulties recording it. She or he sends me the sound files, then I have lots of sound files. I must listen to the sound files, I must think, does it actually contribute what I want to do, how to configure the sound files, how to edit them out, how to put them in string, and so on. All this, I think, is substantial work.
For you,
Substantial work, and well, and because it is substantial work, it costs some time, and therefore, the conclusion is the costs are known, but the benefits, the costs are certain, but the benefits are very uncertain.
Yeah. So, so you wouldn't necessarily do that. So that won't be an approach that is suitable in your particular context.
No, my point is rather general. If mm-hmm. For instance, as if I take for face value what you told me about the lecturer who asked student to tell about the experience with the assignment, I think that is not very cost effective in a way that she probably should do other things with her time and the student's time then. Trying to edit out.
Well, I think that there is something which.
I don't want to judge other people's context.
Yeah.
Anyway, but
well, in this case, I think if you understand the context, I think she's working in a. She's in charge of something called a student learning skills center or something,
uh-huh.
which
uh-huh.
provides almost like tutor surgery type support for students who are having. Difficulties with their studies. So she has a team of senior students who were selected by her colleagues for their academic ability and social skills to help students. So these were the people to whom students having study difficulties come, and they have a knowledge of what kind of problems they normally bring in. So podcasts are one of the several other support
and
mechanism.
She also probably, in her course, is different. She does not for the same class. Probably she does not have a class anyway.
No, she teaches.
But what I want to say, I would imagine if you have somebody who does surgery in the sense of helping students who are in difficulties with their study, management of their time, and so on. It seemed to me probably the better strategy to take substantial cases and have recordings, well-made, well-done recording, focusing on key areas of where the difficulties, according to her experience, normally appear, do these properly for once and use it then for several cohorts, mm-hmm. then sort of in a cottage-based industrial manner, ask each cohort of students to blurb a bit about their problems, and then take a lot of time of editing these type of things and report it back to the students.
So. Yeah, and also in this case, she has support for editing as well, so she doesn't really have to.
Well, that is. Free lunches.
Yeah, but the institution employs a technologist, and the technologist has to work.
Must
right?
have something to do. But
no, it's not really. Yeah, I think it's unfair.
From an economic point of view, these are still costs.
Yeah, but you have to spend. I mean, you have to. Yes, of course there are costs. And
in Germany we have the funny expression EDA costs.
Uh-huh.
That means very many lectures in the university.
Yeah.
For instance, when they are asked to, they come in and say, okay, can I use your photocopying machine? And then you say, okay, you have to pay something for the photocopying machine. Then the lecturer would be much taken aback, and the machine is Ida. It's anyway there, so yeah, why yeah. should I pay something?
Hey, yeah.
But you must realize that in principle there is a cost involved.
Yeah.
The machine has to be
costed.
Depreciated, and the cost must be shared among the different users. And in a way, if you employ a technologist, the cost of employing the technologist must be shared among the different users. And therefore, there's a price tag. If she goes and takes the time of the technologist and use it for editing her material, there's a price tag involved. It might camouflaged price in such a sense that there is no internal market which flashes up to the lecturer. Here is a cost involved because I have to pay to the editor something. She even thinks, I make the institution as a whole even more effective because otherwise this editor has nothing to do and he is twiddling his thumbs.
Yeah.
And has
But still,
that is true. It is probably for the university as expensive when the editing department has nothing to do. But eventually, if the editing department has nothing to do what they really should do, then the university could close this department.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore, formally, it is using these editing facilities and so on is a cost. And therefore, we should acknowledge that when we first talked about the low-cost lecturer approach in podcasting, the lecturer can do it herself. And now we collect different podcasts and want them to be edited. Then it's another order of cost.
Yeah, well, I think it is quite difficult to, I don't know, measuring the cost. I don't know whether we are in educational institutions, whether we always work on cost-benefit basis. If you look at the use of VLAs, I don't know whether it's the best way of spending money. Perhaps if you look at the license fees and all the maintenance fees and so on, whether all these monies should have been spent on providing better face-to-face support. So I don't think, I'm not sure when an institution spend money on large-scale technology solutions, whether they do that based on cost-benefit analysis. I don't know I'm not sure the application of cost-benefit analysis to education is the right way around either. I think cost-benefit comes from different discipline, I think. Discipline, is that coming from military? Then we try to apply the same kind of framework to education. Yes. Is that the right thing? And also what we need to think about is, we have got the wrong thing to do. And also what we need to think is, perhaps cost-benefit analysis is okay for a place like UK Open University or large-scale open universities. But in a module where we are thinking about a lecturer comes to teaching for, say, 10, 20, 30 years, and then every year they come up with same kind of issues, and then when something like podcast comes up, and they think that, okay, I can use this tool to address some of these issues, and give it a go. I think that's how all these people using podcasts. So one of the ways in this case is she thought, okay, if you get
so many things that I must interrupt you and comment on that.
Yeah.
Different thing. I would agree that we should not open up the whole issue on cost-effectiveness analysis on if it should be applied generally and so on. That is another can of worms which I don't want to use here. But the interesting thing about this podcasting for me is in a way it is one-way technology. It is one is speaking, and it's not an interactive technology in the sense Breeze online conference, all these conferencing technologies are. The conferencing technologies which came in the wake of the internet and the new communication technologies, they have changed completely the cost structure of distance education, because for the first time they allowed responsive interaction at a distance, and that sort of drove horses through the whole setting of cost structure in traditional open university, and because open universities with the first and second generation of media, they were mainly based on one-way technologies, and they based on these one-way technologies, they could capitalize on scale economies, mm-hmm. and that was the core argument for efficiency. So now you have, you introduce, and that is for me the paradoxical thing, yeah. you introduce a sort of one-way technologies, but a one-way technology without any scale economic benefits. So the way we introduced in the beginning, one-way technologies is because we said, okay, we can do it once and then do it well and then spread the costs over many users. Now you say, no, we can use one-way technologies also low cost, we do it at low cost, do it possibly badly and use it only once.
Oh, I don't say that. No.
And that is, for me, that is, from an economical point of view, it's a mad
decision. Economics is right.
It should be allowed only on the fringes and that sort of sprinkling of the cake, but not interfere
well,
with
Well, I think that the what you are thinking, I mean, it looks like you are thinking in terms of replacing one with another. Are you thinking? I mean,
I only wanted to play out this difference. In the history of distance education, started with a problem.
Right. Okay.
The problem of distance education was there is no responsive interaction at a distance.
Yeah.
Therefore, we have to shift the main distance educational transaction from direct classroom interchange into one-way technologies. Mm-hmm. And therefore comes Holmberg with his core concept of simulated interaction. And he said, we can design the one-way material in a conversational manner, putting in-text questions, in-text activities, and so on.
Mm.
So designing the material in such a way that the interactivity is designed into the material.
Right.
And then we do it very nice. We have a team approach of editors and so on. We do it wonderful, and we do it for once, and then we run it 1,000 times, and then costs drop substantially down, and we employ only tutors who actually help the students understand the text, but they are not lecturers in their own right. So we have this double combination of capital for labor and labor for labor substitution, which makes the things obvious.
Mm.
Second stage now came the technology which allowed responsive interaction at a distance, which sort of did blow up these type of arrangements. The good thing is we now can do interaction as it is. And now, that is a paradox thing, you come and say, okay, we are not anymore interested in this conferencing technology,
wait, didn't say that.
Which allow interaction as it is. We have discovered one thing which is wonderful, but from our point of view, it's actually mad, because you want to use a one-way technology in a low cost, low quality manner.
Not to replace. That's the important distinction. Yeah. That is one.
Yeah, that means it has.
Yes, of course.
No
of course.
Substitution.
Yeah, yeah.
At
of
all.
Course. I mean,
only
I understand.
An add-on, a yeah. raisin.
Right. Okay. I understand. I don't think the raisin is the right metaphor anymore. Anyway. Think about something else. Anyway, I think maybe you are coming from a distance learning perspective, right? In that case, maybe podcast is not a good way around, perhaps, because you've got your designed classrooms, designed material, and designed use of VLEs and the breeze and so on. So in that case, you have a particular kind of learner profile who are maybe willing to sit in a breeze meeting with everybody else and be able to communicate with you and so on. And also they are willing to use online discussion forums. What I'm talking mainly is the it's an on-campus situation. If you look at how many times the same lecture being given every year, if you are a lecturer, I'm sure it's being changed gradually, but I think it probably most of the content will be the same. So I think in on-campus situations, people don't really think about, you create your nice lecture and then you use it every year, at least for 5 years or so. I think that doesn't really happen. So I think the cost structure works differently. And the assumptions are different, I think. So in that case, adding a 5-minute, 10-minute podcast doesn't really add much to the cost, apart from the example I gave you, where there were facilities for idle.
But
other cases
you have,
there were.
You have probably made some assumptions about the situation of the learner. My question, I remember, was very often to you because you were working already since some time in a sort of on-campus e-learning environment.
Yeah.
The big question there is why people want to have actually these type of distance learning material if they could have the direct contact. So don't they experience, for instance, informal atmosphere with the lecturer not anyway in when they meet a lecturer for a seminar or something like that. Well, when for instance Mr. Professor Fothergill sits with his students in a seminar on I don't know what he's doing actually, a sort of telecommunications engineering or something like that. He sits in a seminar, he speaks to them. What isn't it a bit curious to then give them again a podcast?
That's where I think it's quite important to understand the context within which each of these lectures work.
Students are not getting out of bed before 7 o'clock. So,
well, there are several reasons. That's why it's quite difficult to understand, get into his shoes or her shoes. To understand what they really want to try to do. Even if they do a presentation or write a paper, it might not be really apparent because you are coming from, we all come from different perspectives, experiences. He uses podcasts to a way of providing feedback from his ETVTs.
Yeah, but why cannot he provide feedback during his normal face-to-face meeting?
Yeah, the normal face-to-face meeting is limited to an hour, or maybe 2 hours.
Yeah,
so
does he? But why expanding? Okay, he can.
No,
I
think
can do generic feedback in a podcast.
Yeah,
in an essay that, but. Feedback to individual students' work, when he does it in podcasting.
No, he doesn't give individual feedback.
Okay.
It's a group feedback.
It's a group, it's a sort of. And doesn't he. Normally, you would have in a traditional British university, you have meetings with the professor.
Well,
a small,
in his case,
group,
he's.
And then he can give generic feedback to the group. There, then he doesn't have to record it, or he could do that, and then he uses this little machine and records this, and then give a copy to others to listen to it. So if somebody has missed the lecture, but again, it is difficult for me because in the beginning, as you correctly say, I'm working in the context of distance education, and I projected it on these on these contexts of distance education. What, how could we use podcasting there? And I was almost convinced
until I brought the other. I think if I told you other examples, you will completely.
Until you introduce a string cake, then
That's why do you need to think one approach should replace the other? That's what I was saying. Suppose you have 10 lecturers and they have 10 different approaches.
Well,
it's
I
up
can
to them to decide based on their best understanding of the students and the subject matter.
Well,
what is the best way for them? So it doesn't really mean that if you are given 10, say you have 10 items of food in a menu, you just choose one that is suitable to you.
Well, but
or you may have 100.
As a nutritionist, you can say, okay, if you have these type of vitamins already in your nutrition, you don't have to add these type of food which contains the same vitamins.
And then you have one food. Then the life becomes so boring, wouldn't it? If you have one item.
No, well, as I told you, I look at it also under the framework of cost efficiency, and there you would say, okay,
so if you
leave the freedom to the individual lecturers, but as you say, it has no substitution effect, and I did not expect any substitution effect, but I would say I wonder actually why in a face-to-face environment there's lots of opportunity for projecting these informal
it's
not the case because
if you have 100 students in your module. And you must remember that the lecturer would teach more than one module, and each might contain about 100 students, in some cases more. So you don't really give so much time to your students. None of the from the previous work I did at Kingston, and this particular work, the same thing comes up again and again. That is. Lecturers do not have that much time for individual attention to individual students.
But
because
podcasts are no individual attention.
Well, it is group attention. It's not individual,
yeah.
It's group attention. So you can, if you are a clever lecturer, and if you have, say, 5-10 students coming up and bringing up problems, and you identify, okay, they have these three things, common issues, so why don't I create a podcast? Or why don't I talk about advice on these three things within 5 minutes and put it on a blackboard? So, provided the students listen, they don't have to come to me again and again and again. And then in that case, this kind of things can be used next year as well, for the next 2-3 years. So in that case, it's reusable. This particular lecture I was talking about, students recording, providing feedback on how they attempted their work and so on. Those things are reusable. So in that case, it fits into your cost and cost-benefit analysis model as well.
But my question now is our podcast not becoming too long now?
Okay, let's see how long it is.
How long is
it? Well, it's gone an hour. Shall we stop? Because we need to do this walk and so on. Okay, thanks, Thomas. Let's maybe carry on later on over a bottle of wine or something.
It was instructive. I learned something about podcasting.
We must think about a different metaphor, perhaps, rather than racing.
I'm quite
still on the racing
I'm
theme.
I'm quite content with racing.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I'll show you about 10 different raisins. Okay. Right.
Well, there are different raisins.
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you.
Yeah. We'll leave it then.
Okay.